Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
Friends, thank you for joining us. Anna Hammond here. We're in this series called From Me to We, Building a Place to Belong. When the team and I were getting ready for this series, brainstorming ideas, making plans, one of the words that we kept coming back to was building. Because we recognize that this journey of going from me thinking to we thinking is not one that you can do with a snap of a finger. This is all work that takes time. It's a non-linear journey. Over the last few weeks, we've talked about moving from independence to interdependence, from isolation to vulnerability, moving from hearing to listening, and from fixing to presence. And all of these things are ones that take time and practice. This week is no different. Benjamin J. Thomas is going to guide us into some conversation about healthy boundaries. And healthy boundaries are good because they set us up to honor the unique offering that we have for this world while also opening ourselves up to experience the joy of interconnection with others around us. I don't know about you, but the work of building healthy boundaries sounds kind of like eating oatmeal for breakfast. I know it's a good idea. I know that it's good for me, but it's not exactly fun. Healthy boundaries are something we all know we should have, but the work of actually creating them and maintaining them takes time. This week, though, I found this quote by writer L.R. Nost, who is an author and child development researcher. And she writes this: boundaries are not barbed wire fences, love. Boundaries are the poetry and prose that tell others how to love, respect, and connect with us. Boundaries are the choreography of our relationships, guiding the steps of our interactions. Boundaries are love in action. I might not love the idea of boundaries, friends, but I love, love, love the idea of love in action. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Take it away, Benjamin.
Hi, friends. I'm Benjamin J. Thomas. Thanks for joining us today. A few years ago, a therapist named Nedra Tawab shared this post on Instagram titled, "The Signs You Need Boundaries." And those signs were: one, you feel overwhelmed. Two, you feel resentful toward people asking for your help. Three, you avoid phone calls and interactions with people who might ask for something. Four, you make comments about helping people and getting nothing in return. Five, you feel burned out. Six, you frequently daydream about dropping everything and disappearing. And seven, you have no time for yourself. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read those, I feel a lot of resonance. There's even this little voice inside me that's actually, honestly, like a little bit embarrassed even because of it feeling so true. And so if you are similar, you know that you are not alone, not at all. In fact, after Nedra shared that post, she had such an overwhelming response to it. The post went viral. It basically launched her career as an expert in boundary setting. So today, we're going to spend some time talking about something really important, about healthy boundaries, how to create them, and how vital they are in helping us live out of who we've been created to be. The past several weeks, we've been journeying through this series called From Me to We. We've been exploring the way that our interdependence is such an important, vital element of what makes us human. And now, at first glance, though, boundaries might actually seem like the opposite of interdependence, because they look like walls. We perceive boundaries as walls dividing us. But if we look closer, we'll see that healthy boundaries are actually more like outlines of a space where we can be fully ourselves. And it's in that space that we find the magic of the interconnectivity of true community, where we are really actually made better through our differences, and that it's not just a bumper sticker saying. Because to live truly independently means that we honor the whole by valuing the role of each individual part. There's this passage in his letter to the Romans that the Apostle Paul writes that for in the same way that one body has many different parts, each with different functions, we too, the many, are different parts that form one body. Each one is joined with one another, and we become together what we could not be alone. Now, this, of course, this body analogy inevitably gets taught by every Sunday school teacher, cracking jokes about biceps trying to be eyes, or necks trying to be fingers, or butts wanting to be mouths on stage giving a TED Talk. Thank you, AI, for bringing this to life in such a vivid and disturbing way. Now, Paul's analogy, though, as simple and as kind of goofy as it might be to imagine butt mouths, really holds up. Because each part of the body, though it's distinct and unique, operates within certain boundaries that enable it to perform its designed function while contributing to the larger system. And really a beautiful, beautiful picture of our humanity. But a picture that assumes that each body part knows itself well enough and respects the roles of the other parts to participate in that bigger picture. And boundaries are what enable us to define our space, protect that essential piece of who we are, and interact with others in a way that honors both our individuality and our collective existence. Dr. Henry Cloud writes that boundaries define us. They define what is me and what is not me. A boundary shows me where I end and where someone else begins. Now, I'll be totally honest. The more I learn about boundaries and healthy boundaries, the more I realize, man, I have a lot of work to do in this area. In fact, the very fact that I'm the one doing this teaching is on this particular topic is probably some sort of evidence of my own lack of boundaries on my part. So we're going to do this together. We're going to learn together. We're going to grow together. And for a little bit of help, I'm going to turn to Nedra Glover Tawab, who I referenced earlier in her book called Set Boundaries, Find Peace, A Guide to Reclaiming Yourself. We'll drop a link to this book in the notes of the podcast. Go check this book out. It's great. There's a lot of books about boundaries. So this one in particular just was turned on to recently and has some really great stuff. So I'll share a little bit of that with you today, what I'm learning. In the book, Nedra offers her definition of boundaries, and she says that boundaries are expectations and needs that help you feel safe and comfortable in your relationships. Expectations in relationships help you stay mentally and emotionally well. Learning to say no and when to say yes is an essential part of feeling comfortable and interacting with others. And then she goes on to say this. She says that creating healthy boundaries leads to feeling safe, loved, calm, and respected. They're an indication of how you allow people to show up for you and how you show up for others. She says a boundary is a cue to others about how to treat you. It can be explicit, like saying, I'm about to share something with you that I'd like you to keep between you and us. Or implicit, such as having a basket of shoes and socks right by the front door for guests. Now, then she goes on and she breaks boundaries up into three types. And I want to walk through these three types with you because it's a really helpful framework for understanding boundaries and the different types. And the three types of boundaries that we're talking about today are porous boundaries, rigid boundaries, and healthy boundaries. Now, porous boundaries, these are the kinds that we might find ourselves creating when we're like overcommitting or oversharing. Or simply we're unable to say no, even when it's detrimental to our own well-being. Imagine porous boundaries being like having a fence made of chicken wire. It's flimsy and there's these big, large gaps and anything can kind of pass through it. That kind of fence doesn't really provide any sort of protection or delineation between your property and the outside world. For me personally, this is where I tend to default if I'm not staying conscious. especially as a self-identified Enneagram 9. If you're familiar with Enneagram, us 9s have this ability to see and feel into all the other Enneagram numbers. Some people call us the crown of the Enneagram. But it often means that I end up taking on the energy of other people, even to the point of enmeshment where I'm having trouble identifying what I think and what I feel about a particular situation. Now, there's a lot of people who develop porous boundaries in childhood environments where boundaries might not be well respected or modeled or maintained, or where personal fears of rejection or abandonment have created traumatic experiences in your life that just need a little bit of work, attention, and self-awareness. Totally normal to have porous boundaries, though. The second type of boundaries are the other extreme, right? These are rigid boundaries. Here at this extreme, walls are high and the gates are shut so tightly, almost like living in an impenetrable fortress. And while it might protect us to have really rigid boundaries, oftentimes what it does is it isolates us from the outside world and actually prevents us to having meaningful interactions, meaningful relationships, being able to be vulnerable with one another. Now, rigid boundaries often stem from that, a fear of vulnerability. Oftentimes, rigid boundaries we start to develop when we've been hurt in the past by betrayals. These betrayals might have caused you to put up some strict rules or walls. Sometimes these rules and walls are even totally unconscious, but oftentimes these are done as a protective shield. Again, rigid boundaries, they've been used to protect us, but they keep us from being fully human. For instance, you might have gotten burned once by a friend that you loaned money to 20 years ago and they didn't pay you back, and now you have this sort of rule that you walk around with going, I don't ever lend money to anyone. Rigid, staunch, right? So that's the second kind of boundary. And the third boundary are healthy boundaries. And these are kind of the Goldilocks boundaries. Not too loose, not too tight, but just right. Healthy boundaries are like a well-maintained picket fence with a well-defined gate. What they require, though, is attention. They require this sort of fine balancing act, being really clear about what we value and having a level of vulnerability with those who have earned our trust. They are all about respecting our own needs and the needs of others. Okay, so how do we go about creating and upholding these healthy boundaries? Setting up healthy boundaries is actually this like two-step dance between both communication and action. The first step in the dance is communication. This involves verbally expressing and articulating our boundaries with clarity. For instance, you might have a friend who is actually in a really needy position and is constantly needing attention, and you're worn out. You've had a busy week, and so you might need to set a boundary and say, I need some quiet time this weekend to recharge, to unplug, so I actually won't be available for hangouts this weekend. That kind of communication is clear, and it's respectful. And then the second step of the dance, though, is action. And this gets tough because even when you get those text messages from this person, you're going to have to follow through on it. Because if you set a boundary and then cross it, then that changes the whole dynamic. The person starts to see you as a person who just crosses boundaries, who just says things and doesn't follow through. Brené Brown says that daring to set boundaries is about having the courage to love ourselves even when we risk disappointing others. Let me read that again. Daring to set boundaries is about having the courage to love ourselves even when we risk disappointing others. I don't know about you, but man, do I struggle with letting people down. The reality is that if your identity is deeply tied to the approval of others, of anyone, a spouse or partner or kids, your boss, your friends from college that you're still in touch with and kind of still want to impress, it's going to be really, really hard. And it's going to be a challenge to say no, letting people down. That's just part of it. That's why that's two-step dance is a lifelong process that depends on us having a healthy practice of being okay in our own skin, and that our identity is rooted in something deeper and more grounded. And all of that, it just takes practice. It's why it's important to have a practice. But when we get into it, and we start to get into that flow and take steps of growth in this way, we start living out of that more grounded space, it becomes much easier and more natural to participate in that two-step dance, that communication and action. Now, we have two teenagers living at home with us, and so we are keenly aware of this importance and the challenge of both of these. So I've invited my wife, Joy, to join us and share some real-world examples of the importance of both communication and action. Oh, hey.
Hi.
Oh, and this is Williams. Williams, say hi.
He's a TV dog now.
Yeah, that's right. Williams is the guide dog puppy that our girls are raising. Dogs are excellent teachers of boundaries, and we're working on a lot of boundaries with him. Believe it or not, he was actually sitting at my feet this entire time I've been filming this teaching. He's a good pup most of the time. One boundary we're working on with him is, it's kind of gross.
Yeah.
Can I tell the story?
Yeah, oh, sure.
He likes to eat poop. Like, he's been eating Rojas poop. So we're trying to set a boundary with him, communicate clearly and take action. I pull it out of his mouth and I yank his collar. Anyway, that's enough of that. Joy,
oh
our
my
kids,
gosh. Yeah,
our teachers, you know?
Yeah, teenagers, dogs, we have two of each. Those are great teachers of boundaries. And it's hard, right? Because I feel like there's judgment from people on the outside. Why don't you do this? Right? There's silent judgment, there's spoken judgment. And it's like, well, you want to have boundaries, but you don't want to be rigid. Like our daughter, Lucy, I'm not going to tell her this weekend that she can't go see her best friends watch the state cross-country meet that she wants to support them in. And at the same time, her leaving makes it that we had Williams for the day. And so just finding that balance between, okay, like, we don't want to be rigid. She could go on this trip. But then the next time, it was like, yeah, all the different things with paperwork, even. Then we found out that the girls hadn't turned in their paperwork. So it was just being really clear that the club leader for Williams needs to have reports on him. And when she doesn't get those, she gets frustrated. Then we get frustrated. And so I find that there's a lot of resentment when boundaries aren't clear and when people aren't able to communicate those. But once they're communicated, like I just saw Lucy texted our club leader, Barb, she texted Ellie, and she finished the updated report because we were able to say, hey, this needs to be done by 1 o'clock today. And so it came in. So it's like setting those. But when we don't set those, I find that I tend to get more mad. Like, why didn't she just do them without me asking? And then I get all frustrated instead of just clearly communicating, hey, this needs to be done by such and such time. If it's not, this is going to be what happens.
And it kind of just snowballs that whole, like, that feeling of the resentment. And it's so easy for that to happen. But so I love that, the framework of clarity with communication, and then taking action and actually acting and following up on it. It's really hard to do, though.
It's really hard to do.
And I think so much of it has to do with this sort of internal work of us being clear with our own expectations with ourselves, not holding a lot of resentment with ourselves. And so that can start to flow out. So, Joy, as we are finishing up here, wrapping up, I want to let you lead us all in a brief meditation.
Sure.
That will, I think, help kind of recenter us just for the time being as we kind of close things out here today. So,
sounds good.
Joy, I'm going to turn it over to you now.
All right.
Here we go.
Right, as we start this short 5-minute meditation on boundaries, I invite you to find a comfortable seat, and you can find a soft gaze or close your eyes, whatever you're comfortable with. I'm going to close mine and just begin by noticing your breath. And try to take a really deep inhale that fills your whole body. And hold it at the top. And then if you can take one more little sip of air at the top. and then open your mouth to let it all out. And then again, breathing in through your nose, filling up your body with air from your toes all the way to the crown of your head. And then holding briefly at the top. And then exhaling a breath through your mouth. And then just picturing right now a boundary that you need to set. Maybe one that you're struggling to set. And if something doesn't come to mind immediately, you can maybe just picture a relationship that tends to test your boundaries. This could be an animal, a child, a family member, a coworker. So any relationship that you find your boundaries tested quite often in, bring that relationship to mind. And I want you to just picture yourself in a scenario with that person or animal right now. And you're in a scenario where they are really pushing your boundaries and you're feeling the response in your body that you feel when this boundary is pushed. Typically, it's kind of a heated feeling of maybe frustration, irritability, anger. That heated emotion is a signpost for you. It's a clue. It's a way for your body to show you, hey, my boundary is being crossed. There's something I don't like here. And because this is only in our minds, I want you to go ahead and picture a response to this being or person that is ungracious, unkind. Because it's only in your mind, allow yourself to unleash the frustration or fury in this situation in an unreasonable way you typically wouldn't behave. And now I want you to picture that same situation, but before going into it, before facing that person, that animal, before being in that same room, I want you to just draw an invisible circle around yourself. Leave enough room for you to move around comfortably within this circle, within this imaginary space. And now picture re-entering that situation with the person that tests your boundaries, with your invisible circle, with the space that allows you to have your own space. And maybe even picture it being lined, the circle, with phrases that are kind and clear. No, this isn't going to work for me. That's a really generous offer. I cannot accept it. That sounds like a lot of fun. I'm not comfortable with you going to that. Maybe sometimes just the word no. You could also, if it's helpful, picture this circle being lined by other symbols of protection that are important to you, such as a cross or some type of calming image that often brings you clarity. And just again, picture that circle being lined with all of those phrases, all of the ways that you can be clear and kind in your boundary setting. And just notice how the interaction in your mind might shift. And how when we draw these imaginary boundaries around ourselves, that's a form of giving ourselves kindness and love, and also giving that person in our person or animal in our life kindness and love, because we're able to respond in a way that isn't super frustrated and heated. It's calm because it's clear and there's a boundary there, and it's good for the relationship. It's perhaps picturing this before you enter a challenging situation or conversation. You can gently open your eyes and come back to this whenever you have a situation that needs some boundary setting.
Joy, thank you so much for that time. Friends, I want to leave us with 5 questions for us to contemplate this week in our journals, or if you're part of a table gathering, to take into conversation and share and reflect and process with other people. So let me ask you, first question is this. In what areas of your life do you find it most challenging to set boundaries? Home or work, or is it with your kids, or is it with a particular group of friends or family? Why do you think all that is? Why is that? Second, which of the 2 extreme boundary types that we talked about do you tend to gravitate toward? Porous boundaries or rigid boundaries? And why do you think that is? Where does it stem from? Just get curious about it. No judgment in here. 0. Just say it out loud. No judgment here. You're just being curious. Why do you tend to gravitate toward either porous or rigid boundaries? Third, how do your personal boundaries reflect your values and priorities in life? 4, can you identify a recent situation where a lack of boundaries led to discomfort or conflict? And how can healthy boundaries have changed the outcome? And lastly, can you identify a recent situation where healthy boundaries actually helped serve your values and priorities? Take these questions, we'll put them up at the end. Whatever resonates with you, whatever resonates with the community that you're gathered with, share together. You know, in the Christian tradition, there is this concept of Trinity. Now, that God, this idea that God or the divine is multifaceted and in 3 persons, Father, Son, Spirit. It can be kind of a heady concept, but at its core lies this deep truth that from the beginning of time as we know it, the divine creative source has always been in relationship with itself. There has always been this idea of self other, this duality that comes into unity. And much like a community with well-established boundaries, distinct identities, but connected. I think it paints this beautiful picture of the communities that we're all in together, creating in our households, locally, globally, especially in faith communities like ours, like the Orchard, where one of our core values is interdependence. And so I want to highlight that, the Trinity. I want to close us by reading this quote from Pope Francis reflecting on this interconnection between Trinity and the global community. He says this, "Now, the primary analogy for God is the Trinity, meaning a communion of substantient relations. In other words, God is not a solitary being, but rather a communion of 3 persons in love. The world, created according to this divine model, is a web of relationships. Everything is interconnected, And this invites us to develop a spirituality of that global solidarity which flows from the mystery of the Trinity. Peace, light, interconnection, safe boundaries. All be with you, my friends.
And now, friends, before we wrap up, there's a couple things that I want to make sure you have on your radar. First of all, don't forget our second Sunday gathering coming up on Sunday, November 12th. Yes, it's November. November 12th, 11 o'clock a.m. at Society 57 in DTA, downtown Aurora. So if you're in the area, join us. Again, that's Sunday, November 12th at 11 o'clock a.m. at Society 57. Another opportunity to deepen our connections and to, well, to nurture our collective journey of faith. And, you know, listen, as we come together this second Sunday, let's also remember that the growth and the sustenance of our community are possible through, well, through the generosity of you. That's right, those of you who have been impacted by and believe in the work of the Orchard community. You should know that your financial support empowers us to maintain and to grow this sacred space where we can gather to learn and to inspire and to become the people that we've been created to be. And so, listen, whether it's your presence, your prayers, your financial contribution, you should know that each act of support intertwines to strengthen the fabric of our community. And so we do encourage you to consider what you can share. And listen, as we invest together, we make it possible for the Orchard to continue to be a place of solace and of challenge and of spiritual renewal. I want to remind you, friends, there's a few ways you can give. If you're watching this on Sunday, you can give by clicking the give button in the chat window. You can also give by going to our website, theorchardcommunity.com/give. And of course, you can give through the Orchard app. And last not least, you can also snail mail a check if you'd like to the P.O. box that is on your screen. And I want to say a big thank you for your generosity. It truly is making a difference. And listen, can't wait to see you second Sunday. Hope you will join us. And now, a benediction. Friends, listen, as we stand on the threshold of a new month, let us carry the warmth of our community into the crisp air that awaits us. May the change of seasons remind us of life's constant renewal, and may we embrace the fresh possibilities that each day brings. And so, I want to encourage you to go forth, friends, with the assurance that the same hands that turn the leaves and guide the seasons are at work in our lives, in your life, fostering growth and bringing forth new beginnings. So may the peace that surpasses all understanding guide your steps. May the hope that springs eternal fill your hearts. And may the love that binds us together as community light our way forward. And lastly, listen, may each of you walk, and may all of us here, listen, may we walk into this new month with courage, with joy, and with the anticipation of the good that is yet to come. In peace and with a spirit of expectancy, we all together say, amen and amen. Friends, you are loved. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll look forward to seeing you again soon.